You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
The score got a little bit out of hand tonight, and we went zone because out of respect for them and the coach, we didn't want to necessarily just run the score up. But we wanted to continue to work on us. It was an opportunity for us to get better, and I think that we did that.
That was Arkansas assistant coach Chin Coleman after the Razorbacks defeated Maryland Eastern Shore last night by a score of 109-35 at Bud Walton Arena. 74-point victory for the Razorbacks, the third largest in program history, tied for the third largest in program history. It was every bit of a mismatch, just say like Arkansas football playing UAPB earlier this year. If there was any way to like do this, I would like to put UAPB football on the field against Maryland Eastern Shore basketball. And I mean, because it was both of those teams are terrible. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Arkansas learned last night, but they certainly won.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, Anthony? Anthony Christensen.
That was a basketball game. It happened. Yeah. I mean, it was Maryland Eastern Shore's largest run, if I'm not mistaken, was a 3-0. And that was on a three-point basket, on their three-point basket that they made. Positives. I mean, he did mention that they worked on some zone. I guess if you want to look at it, I mean, John L. Davis shot well from the field for the first time kind of since that Lipscomb game. Maybe that gets him going. Carter Knox looked good, kind of maybe getting some of that, I guess, rust knocked off and just kind of maybe getting some confidence from that game. All five starters and double figures. You get to play some of those end-of-bench guys, some of those reserves there at the end. But, it was a basketball game.
So 74-point win. It this is what it tied with. Just think about this. This was 99 years ago. They won 81-7 over the Ozark Athletic Club in the 1925-26 season. They've had two wins that were bigger. They beat Mississippi Valley State in 2020. It was the season opener that year, 142-62. That was Eric Musselman's second team. And then the school record was an 82-point victory over Bethune-Cookman in 1991. There were times last night when I took my son to the game, and you know, we're sitting there, and I'm looking at the scoreboard, and I'm like, I almost can't believe my eyes the type of score that you're seeing, because I think at one point it was like 94-24. Mm-hmm. It just crazy.
I could believe it. Yeah.
So what do you learn? What do you learn from a game like that?
You learn that you can beat Maryland Eastern Shore by 74 points.
Hey, I don't know about you guys, but I was watching the game last night, and I think it was like 37-8, mm-hmm. and I'm rooting for Maryland Eastern Shore just to get close to the basket. Like, every time they'd bring it up the floor, whoever the primary ball handler was, it was like he could barely dribble. He would just lose the ball off his foot, or he would just lose the handle on it, or it'd get stolen. I'm just like, somebody make a basket, please. This is so sad. This is hard to watch.
Yeah, they got some claps every time they scored from the Bud Walton faithful.
Yeah, you start to feel bad for them.
Yeah, I felt bad for them.
I did feel bad for them.
I feel bad for these teams like that because, you know, this is part of a butt-kicking tour that they're on. I mean, they went to Illinois. Now they go to UConn next. What did these kids do to deserve this? Basically, what's happening – no, I'm serious. What happening is that, you know, their school just hangs them out to dry for paychecks.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, those paychecks, they fund the whole athletic department.
It does. I mean, I understand.
So, I mean, that is the big reason for it. But
I did see their record. They were, I think, going into the game last night, they were 2-6. Who they beat?
They beat Penn State, like Cully Shull or something like that. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced. And then I don't know if this is how it's pronounced. Gallaudet. And Gallaudet is a school founded for the betterment of education for the deaf and hard of hearing.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow.
So.
Well, at least they have two wins. I mean, that might be their only two wins all year, but at least they felt what it's like to win a game.
They do know what it's like to win
a game. I just don't know how that helps their team at all, other than it gives them a paycheck and helps keep the light. But, I mean, You know, I don't know how much they were paid for this game, but does going to Arkansas and getting 60,000, does that really make, you know, that big of a difference from, you know, going somewhere else and getting 40 and it being a game that you might actually be able to be competitive in?
They're not going to be competitive in any bye games. I'm sorry.
Maybe not. Maybe not. But I just.
Well, actually, they were competitive against
Old Dominion.
I
watch. You know, I watch these types of games, and you've heard me get on my spiel and my soapbox about SEC teams playing FCS teams. You know, I mean, like, what is it? How does it help either of them other than you get a win and they get a check? I just don't know how, like, on the floor or on the field or whatever. It really helps you a whole lot. I felt bad for pretty much everybody. I felt bad for the Razorback players, you know, like, because they're not really getting challenged in that game. I obviously felt bad for the Eastern Shore players because they're like two rungs below a team that ought to be playing Bud Walden. But Arkansas does win. They had a nice showing. I mean, the stats, this is one of these games where you eat on this statistically. All year long, they shot 56% from the floor. Razorbacks shot 44% from three. They were 15 of 34 last night, 83% from the free throw line. And again, I mean, it's just, you just go down the list. It's, I mean, you want points in the paint, you got points in the paint. You want fast break points, you got fast break points. You got steals, assists, everything you could possibly want last night. The Razorbacks had it 31-0, points off of turnovers. It's just a complete mismatch all across the board. Arkansas led by Carter Knox, the freshman off the bench, 21 points for him. Billy Richmond had a nice game for him off the bench too. He had 14. And then all of Arkansas starting five, they finished in double figures. Nellie Davis and Boogie Flan both with 16. Adu Thero with 11. DJ Wagner with 13. Zvonimir Visic with 14. Now they got Illinois, who is going to be nothing like this team they played.
You don't think so?
On Monday night. Well, I will say what's kind of interesting, if you're score watching, Illinois beat Maryland Eastern Shore by 47 over the weekend. Arkansas beats them by 74, so you'd say, hey, Arkansas plus 27. But then Arkansas beat Little Rock by 12, and Illinois beat Little Rock by 58 last night. So something's got to give when they meet in Kansas City in a couple of days.
Yeah, and that'll be a fun game. I mean, Illinois is obviously a very good team. A lot of really good shooters on that team. Zvonimir Ivasic's brother plays for that team. Some similarities in their games. Tomislav is more of a back-to-the-basket guy than Zvonimir is, but a lot of really good shooters on Illinois' team. I know one of those players pretty well, Ben Hummerkaus, just because I covered him at Evansville. Great kid. Excited to see him. It'll be a lot of fun. Obviously, Brad Underwood teams are always really well coached. This Illinois team was, I think, underrated kind of coming into the season, by myself included in that group. But there's a lot to like about Illinois. They've obviously had a good start to the season. Lost to Alabama by 13 on a like, semi-away neutral site.
It was in Birmingham.
Yeah, neutral.
There's nothing neutral about Birmingham and the Tide. Trust me.
It'll be a fun game. I think. I mean, it'll be Illinois' first non-Alabama test, really, because I mean they've just kind of been walking all over, you know, Eastern Illinois or SIUE, Oakland, Maryland, Eastern Shore, Little Rock.
Well, this is part of an MTE, too, a multi-team event. that includes Little Rock and Maryland, Eastern Shore. John Calipari did not speak last night, either on the post-game radio show or in the media room. He let his assistant coaches do the talking. Kenny Payne was on the radio. Chin Coleman was in the media room. Payne on the radio said, sorry, Coach Cal couldn't be here. He's preparing for Illinois. So that's why you didn't hear from him last night. This is what Chin Coleman had to say when he was asked about not letting up in this game. You know, Arkansas, they've had some trouble against mid-majors this year of letting them stick around. There was no sticking around for Maryland Eastern Shore last night, and this is what Coleman had to say about it.
We've had leads in pretty much all of our games except for one, 14, 16, 18-point leads, and then we put our foot off the gas and uncharacteristic offensively, and then we kind of have some game slippage on the defensive side. So that's something that we've focused on over the past few days in terms of when we do get a team down, How do we keep them down? And that's on both ends of the floor. Can't have any slippage defensively. And then you got to continue to hunt for great shots and not take bad shots. We talk about situational awareness, right? What's a good shot? What's a bad shot? How do we extend a 12-point lead to 16, a 16-point lead to 20? And that comes with chemistry, and that comes with situational awareness. That comes from us being connected and understanding time and score. So we've been working on that. We've been talking about that. And today, you saw a byproduct of that work in terms of when we got a lead, obviously demanding that we continue to do the same things defensively. And finally, we shared the basketball. We got 23 assists. We're a team that wants to be in the high assist range, and we try to hunt 20 assists. And so we were able to share the basketball tonight. And the reason why our offense was explosive tonight is something that we've been waiting on. We knew that it was eventually going to happen. And for example, two guys, Johnny L. Davis, he's not going to continue to play the way he was able to play. He's a 40% three-point shooter his career, so he's going to eventually make shots. Just depends on when that time comes. And he was able to make some shots because he's the hardest worker on our team. And we saw him the other day make 40 in a row. Like, it's just a matter of time. The only thing in between him and making shots is air and opportunity. So he had an opportunity tonight, and he made them.
Arkansas assistant coach Chen Coleman there. Nelly Davis, his three-point shot looked better last night.
Yeah, absolutely.
And seems like he's getting over that wrist injury.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, if you're going to look for anything to take away from that game, that's definitely one of those things that you would highlight.
I certainly think there are things you can take away that are positive from this.
Oh, well, yeah.
I don't mean to sound like a grumpy old man when I'm talking about it. I thought they passed the ball well last night. They were taking open shots. It wasn't a whole lot of contested shots. They were making the extra pass. He mentioned 23 assists. They only made 40 shots. So, I mean, that's over half of their shots that they assisted on. I was impressed with some of the rim protection by Avisic. I thought that was impressive. I don't suppose these guys from Maryland Eastern Shore are very good ball handlers, but the amount of deflections that Arkansas had last night was something that really stuck out to me, and I'm sure it will be something that the coaches are happy with. The number of times that they poked the ball away at the top of the press, or they got in a passing lane and it had a run out dunk or a layup or something. So there's certainly things you can take away from this. Continue.
Yeah. But no, I mean, yeah, you take away that John L. Davis sees the ball go into the net, and maybe he's getting over that wrist injury he was dealing with, and that's obviously, as Chen Coleman said, that's something that you always expect him to do just because of the quality of player he is and how good he's been throughout his career. I mean, he's always been, like he said, about a 40% three-point shooter, so that shot was always going to come, and maybe this is the game that maybe sparks that on because it worked for him.
And
yeah.
I thought getting the Knox and Richmond involved as much as they did, this it could be something that's good for them just from a confidence standpoint moving forward. The fact that both of them were able to play so many minutes. Knox played 24, Richmond played 21, and they were all over the place. You noticed them when they were on the floor. Trevin Brazil was also out there for the Razorbacks back from an ankle injury. He didn't play much, just 12 minutes, scored a couple of points, had two rebounds. Had a couple of fouls during those 12 minutes. But it was, I think a good sign for him that he was back out there. Jonas Adu, still not out there for the Razorbacks. He was not dressed out last night. Coleman was asked about Adu in the postgame press conference last night, just about where he is from this injury that has kind of been kept on the down low a little bit.
Jonas could possibly be day-to-day. That's up to our medical staff. We're waiting. We'd love to have him back as quick as we can because this is a good stretch for us here that we're about to undertake. So if we can have him, it'd be great. If not, then we're going to continue next man up. But having Jonas right now, having him at all is going to give us a different dynamic in terms of our defense and our rebounding and our toughness. Someone who is a proven SEC All-League player, right? We need Jonas as well as we need TB. We need all of our guys. We need the sum of all of our parts to be good.
So we don't know when they're going to have Jonas Adu back, but we know that this team, if they can get him back to 100% of the Jonas Adu that we saw last year for Tennessee, this is a different team when they have him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, as I've said in the past, I mean, that's an elite level rim protector. He's a great offensive player as well. I mean, he's an all-SEC guy for a reason, right? So, you know, if and when they get him up to full speed, I mean, he's going to add a whole different dynamic to the team on both ends of the floor. Whether or not we see him against Illinois, that didn't sound like I'm expecting to see him against Illinois on Thursday. So I wouldn't really, like I said, expect to see him there. But, yeah, whenever he is back, I mean, he is going to add a different dynamic to the team for sure.
Everyone, so you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Also want to tell you that if you're on the road this week with Thanksgiving coming up and you want to find us on our Spotify or Apple, you can by searching Whole Hog Sports, or you can find our video version of the podcast on YouTube. Search Whole Hog Sports there. Anthony, thank you for being with us. When we come back, Christina Long will be in studio with me. We'll talk a little bit about Razorback football, what Sam Pittman had to say yesterday about Missouri. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Also want to tell you, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscription will give you 20-plus issues to Hogs Illustrated magazine each year, plus complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now, hogsillustrated.com, or call 479-684-5509. Christina Long is the managing editor of Hogs Illustrated, and she's in studio with me now. I was telling you about this the other day. I'd never had much to do with neuropathy until I started doing this reader. And in just like the latest instance of our phone listening to us, mm-hmm. I have been inundated with targeted ads about neuropathy treatment ever since I started doing this reader for Enhanced Healthcare Wellness.
Which is really crazy, really insane. I
keep my phone down here next to me the entire show, and it's been listening
to me. I have not gotten any, so there's that. Maybe my phone can't hear you from over here, but...
Do you get the Chick-fil-A rewards at the games?
No.
So they scored 75 last night, and I went on my Chick-fil-A app trying to get the
reward. Oh, yeah.
Couldn't get it.
It's a whole, yeah. It can be a process, because Corey, whenever my boyfriend goes, he always tries to get them, and Ethan does too.
Ethan has got it figured out. Yeah. I'm texting Ethan last night. I'm like, hey, can you help me figure this?
It's kind of glitchy.
Like an old man.
Yeah. Quite frankly. Bob has it figured out, so you should be able to do it.
Text Bob. Yeah, that makes me feel
one thing
bad.
About Bob, he's going to get a coupon for a fast food restaurant. He will do it.
So I can't get Chick-fil-A, but I can get targeted neuropathy ads. That's where we're at. So Sam Pittman spoke yesterday as Arkansas gets ready to play its regular season finale against Missouri on Saturday. It's going to be a 2:30 kickoff. It's going to be on SEC Network. Of course, Missouri has owned this series with Arkansas since they came into the league in 2014. The Tigers have won 8 out of 10. Arkansas's last win in the series was in 2021. That was here in Fayetteville. Their only other win in the series was in 2015 here in Fayetteville. They've never won in Columbia, not as an SEC team, not back in like 1906, the first time that they played at Faurot Field. This is what Sam Pittman had to say, and you'll hear the question as well, but basically about how motivated Arkansas is to play Missouri.
Mentioned a lot of new players not here last year for the game against Missouri, but the coaching staff, especially on the defensive side of the ball, all here. Do you sense maybe a little extra motivation from those guys based off what happened in this matchup?
We've motivated. I've done good I can motivate, and you know, they don't get tired of me by the time the week's in, but and we can't have that kind of performance again, but we have high respect because they're really a good team, physical team. But you know, we got all the motivation we need. We just got to go up there and play well.
I mean, Missouri here last year, they pantsed Arkansas. That's about the only way you can say it. It was just an absolute embarrassment what they did to them. Beat them 48-10 or 48-14. They lost 48-10 to Auburn 2 weeks earlier on the same field. Basically the same game replayed against Missouri. It was an embarrassment to Arkansas. There's really no other way to put it. They weren't competitive. Missouri probably could have won that game by 60 had they wanted to. They did call off the dogs in the fourth quarter. I mentioned this about Tennessee and Georgia a couple of weeks ago, that there are certain teams that I feel like there's just a mental block. And I feel like for Arkansas, Missouri is one of those teams that it's just this mental deal that they just can't get over that hurdle. Now, Missouri last year was just way better than them on the field. Yeah. But there have been a lot of times, and you've seen it and I've seen it, where Arkansas has gone up there, Missouri has come here with teams that Arkansas is better than. They just can't get over the Missouri hurdle.
It's so strange. It doesn't make any sense. And I interviewed, we'll talk a little bit about this story.
Now, I want to talk about this too.
Yeah, I talked to Barry Odom this week, or last week, I guess it was, about kind of having been on both sides of this quote-unquote rivalry and mm-hmm. how he saw it. And he basically mentioned, like, I don't really know why it was so hard for us to beat Missouri, us being Arkansas. He mm-hmm. just was saying, I don't know why, what the reason for that is, because it was always something that he was saying, you know, for him personally, he was always really highly motivated to beat Missouri. And he said he would play it up with his guys. Like, it was the biggest game of the year for him. And he made it that way for his guys. He had some guys who he had brought in from Missouri, you know. So it's not as if they don't care about this game. It's not that. Even in years like last year, you know, where things have been, you know, it was kind of a bad season for them. It was, you know, they were kind of just trying to get to the end of the year. Obviously Odom wasn't here by then, but it was just kind of an interesting, it's not like they don't care. It's not like they don't show up. It's just, or they're not trying to, they just don't sometimes. And it's very weird that they haven't been able to overcome it.
I think that I think there are a lot of Arkansas fans that look down their nose at Missouri. And I don't think this is just an Arkansas thing. Missouri, you know this as well as anybody, it is a different place. It does not fit, at least I don't think. You tell me if you think I'm wrong. Culturally, it does not fit with the rest of the SEC. When you're in Columbia, it doesn't feel like it feels when you're in Athens. It doesn't feel like it feels when you're in Oxford. Doesn't even feel like it feels like when you're in Fayetteville. And talking about feels like, have you seen the weather for this weekend?
Oh, my God. I hadn't until we were texting about it last night.
34 is the forecasted high on Saturday. Low of 15. And keep in mind, this game's going to kick off at 2:30. So it's going to be dark. You're not going to have the sunshine. And at the end, and a 40% chance of snow.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly.
It's like when you go up there, once you hit I-44, it's kind of like if you've ever been in a snowstorm up here in Northwest Arkansas, like, when you're on the south side of the Bobby Hopper Tunnel, it's a different world than when you get to the north side of the mm-hmm. Bobby Hopper Tunnel. Same thing goes with Missouri and weather, just period. Once you get north of I-44, mm-hmm. it's a totally different world than when you're south of I-44.
Yeah.
And every time I've gone up there, now granted, I've only gone up to Columbia in like the, you know, late fall and the dead of winter for basketball, but every time I've gone up there, it's like, my God, this place is the coldest place on earth.
It can get pretty dreary too, yeah, because it's just kind of that gray cold. You would get you get a decent amount of snow, but not crazy. I mean, more than you get here. And yeah, it's very strange. It's very unpredictable.
2013, I went to Surprise, Arizona, and covered four Razorback baseball games. They were the number one ranked team in the country, and they lost all four. Lost to Arizona State twice, Gonzaga. They had Marco Gonzalez pitching for them. Lost to Pacific. Got walked off with three runs in the bottom of the ninth out on the backfield of the Royals and Rangers spring training facility. I leave Phoenix on a Sunday, get back into Northwest Arkansas really early on Monday. I flew into Tulsa, and so it was like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. when I got back. And then that night I drove to Columbia for Mike Anderson's first game back at Mizzou Arena after he'd become Arkansas's coach. In surprise, it was 90. In Columbia, it was like 24. And my body did not handle it very well at all.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
I was shaking like a chihuahua the entire game.
Usually people say shaking like a leaf, but I like chihuahua better.
There you go. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. They are constantly trembling.
Yeah. Poor guys. They don't have any meat on their bones. But going back to Columbia, it just feels different from the SEC. I feel like everybody in the SEC kind of looks down on Missourians. Like, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because A&M, they fit the SEC.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, I'd say they fit the SEC. Texas, I think they fit the SEC. Missouri, culturally, regionally, everything about Missouri just feels different from the SEC. And so I feel like people look down on it, on Missouri a little bit. And here's where I'm going with all this. Because they don't take the game seriously and they don't take Missouri as seriously, I think there's a misconception that the team doesn't take Missouri mm-hmm. seriously. And I don't think that's the case. I think they want to beat Missouri. I just think Missouri has been a better football program for the better part of the last decade.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I agree with your statement. For listeners who don't know, I went to Missouri. I grew up in Fayetteville, and I went to Mizzou. I agree with the idea that they do not feel like an SEC team. The game day experience is not an SEC experience. It's not bad, but it's not an SEC experience.
It's like a Big Ten game.
Yeah, exactly. They feel a lot more culturally Big Ten, and mm-hmm. that's not a bad thing. It's just different. And it's when you're, you know, a team like Arkansas where you're going into road environments that are SEC, you play in a home environment that is more truly SEC. It is different. It for sure is. And I think Missouri is kind of aware of that. I think Missouri knows that they're, you know, looked down upon. I think Drinkwitz really owns that and leans into it and, you know, likes to, any chip he can put on that shoulder, he's gonna do it. And I think they really play that way. And yeah, for whatever reason, this end of the year game, even in seasons when Missouri has been sort of limping toward the end of the season, the way that Arkansas was last year, Missouri has showed up and gotten it done in a way that has been unexpected sometimes.
Pittman was asked about Eli Drinkwitz yesterday. Of course, you know, they came into the league together. Drinkwitz, a lot of people think he was a candidate for the Arkansas job, along with Lane Kiffin, along with Mike Leach. They all end up in the SEC at the same time. Drinkwitz goes to Missouri from Appalachian State, from Alma. Obviously, I think everybody knows that at this point. And Drinkwitz likes to play the villain. There's no doubt about that. I call him a dime store Steve Spurrier. You know, Spurrier always wanted to stir the pot. But Spurrier had the accolades to back it up. Drinkwitz doesn't have that, or at least he doesn't have that yet. They had a great season last year, but there were also people, I think, calling for his job early in the year last year. So, but he likes to stir the pot. And we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, some of the things that he's done. But this was Pittman on just the relationship with Eli Drinkwitz and the way Drinkwitz has, I guess, acted to maybe add some fuel to this rivalry.
You know, I have respect for, he stirred up a lot of stuff, not just with Arkansas. So I have a lot of respect for him. He's a hell of a coach now. And you don't want him to have the ball on the last drive. And I mean, you don't, because he's outstanding and has won a lot of games that way. You know, it's a rivalry. He told me he's going to try to stir it up too when we first, came here. I respect the guy. He's obviously done a really nice job there. So, you know, we're rivals, and they've got the trophy, and they've had it for the last 2 years. We'd like to get it back.
So, Sam Pittman on Eli Drinkwitz. Blake, if you'll play the first Drinkwitz clip that I sent you, you've probably seen this. And we'll play the clip for you if you're watching this on our video version. Blake will just play this as we're talking. This was last week at Mississippi State. And if you're a good lip reader, you know what he said. He says, "Hey, Mississippi State, shut the you-know-what up, or I'm going to score." And this certainly got a lot of traffic. What's the word I'm trying to say?
Traction?
Traction, there you go. Yeah, I got a lot of traction last week. This clip of him, this is late in the Mississippi State-Missouri game where Missouri's right on the goal line. They're winning 39-20, and that ended up being the final score. I guess Mississippi State players were yapping at Missouri players. I would guess that it was probably going both ways.
Sure.
And they end up, I guess they end up taking a knee and winning 39-20. It's that kind of stuff, though. It seems like there's something about every other week with Drinkwitz that, whether it's intentional, I don't know if he knew that there were going to be cameras on him or not, but there's
always something
going on with him that's got him kind of being the bad guy, so to speak.
Oh, he loves it. He eats it up. And I think you're right about him. You know, they've been fine. They've been good. They were in playoff contention, it seemed like, early in the year, things like that. They were a team that was talked about kind of on the fringes of that. But you're right that they haven't actually backed it up.
They haven't played anybody.
They haven't, yeah.
And when they have played somebody, they got popped in the mouth every time.
Right, exactly.
Alabama beat them by 34. A&M beat them by 31. Yeah. It could have beat them by a lot more.
Yeah.
A&M took their foot off the gas in the second half of that, you know, just started running the ball, trying to shorten the game. Even South Carolina last week, I'll give Missouri credit for coming back and making it a game, but that didn't look like it was going to be much of a game in the first half. No. South Carolina was really ready for them, and then for whatever reason, you know, they weren't able to put them away.
Yeah, I mean, they've been an interesting team this year. They really have. I mean, they always are good for a win that they shouldn't get and good for a loss that they shouldn't get. And the games in between, you never know. They've gotten away with some games this year, some games that they, you know, the way it looked, they shouldn't have won. And that's kind of been their thing. And I think you're right. Drinkwitz, he loves to be the villain. I thought it was interesting that Pittman said that, you know, when they both got hired, that when they talked, Drinkwitz kind of told him he was going to kind of play it up. I think that's interesting the way coaches talk to each other about that, because I would imagine, you know, when Eli and Sam are talking to each other on the field before the game, or if they cross paths in other coaching circles, I'm sure it's perfectly respectful and nice. And, you know, Drinkwitz likes to play it up for cameras, I think. Yeah. And that's fine. You know, coaches, I talked a little bit on radio this morning about how coaches, they want to sell these games. They want to create, you know, not necessarily manufacture drama, but they want there to be intrigue. They want people to come to the game. They want people to watch the game. They want the players to care about the game. The more investment you can get in the game, and I don't even mean from a financial standpoint, but just from people caring about it, the better. And Drinkwitz is really good at making that happen. You know, opponents love to hate him, and that's the lane he wants to occupy.
Missouri, their opponents are 56-55 this year. Now, Arkansas, opponents are 56-54. But Arkansas is not trying to fashion itself as a playoff team either. And Missouri, I mean, even as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago, Drinkwitz was in a post game saying, you know, we're going to the playoff. Yeah, I said at the playoff.
Yeah.
Well, obviously they're not.
Right. Yeah, it's been interesting to kind of watch him sort of campaign that way. And he's always done stuff like that. He's always done, you know, this sort of talking back to players kind of thing. You know, do you remember a couple years ago, maybe it was last year, when there was like a fight in the Arkansas-Missouri game that Missouri very obviously started? Was it last year? And Missouri very obviously started it when you watched the tape.
There have been multiple skirmishes between these teams.
Yeah, and Drinkwitz afterward like talked
the
about
last, it. The game where Bielema got fired walking off the field, there was a skirmish in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think these teams like each other.
I don't think so either.
People talk about whether or not it's a rivalry, and you know, I mean, who cares if it's considered a rivalry? Between the players, it seems like there is a little bit of a, or maybe a lot of animosity there between them.
Yeah, I think especially, you know, when some players followed Barry Odom from Missouri to here, you know, there was some crossover. Yep. I think anytime you have crossover like that, there's
Even before that, you know, you had a group of Fayetteville High School kids who went up there to play, you know, some of them didn't get an opportunity to play here. And it wasn't just Fayetteville kids. I mean, there were other kids from the state of Arkansas. Odom did a great job, I think, of coming down and recruiting the state of Arkansas. And he had some players from the state of Arkansas who really performed well for him up there in Columbia. Play this other clip here, Blake. This is the other thing that obviously plays into this. This is the meme that Eli Drinkwitz tweeted last year when Courtney Crunchfield flipped his commitment from Arkansas to Missouri. I guess it was right on signing day during the early signing period. I was told that did not go over very well at Arkansas's building at all.
Why should it? Here's something interesting from Sam's presser yesterday. He was asked about, you know, hey, Missouri seems to have a lot of Arkansas kids and Arkansas doesn't seem to have that many Missouri kids. You know, what do you think? And Pittman said, I don't see a lot of Arkansas kids on the two deep, which I don't know if he was intentionally being spicy, but it was spicy. So I thought that was kind of interesting, kind of an allusion to Crutchfield there, because he hasn't, I think, contributed for Missouri this year. But yeah, I remember when Drinkwitz tweeted that was a big moment. That was a big story for, you know, the late off, you know, early off season, kind of in between bowl time discussion.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't go over well. No. And, you know, you always wonder about, do the coaches, do they really pay attention to all the stuff that goes on social media? And I think a lot of times they don't. I think that one, yeah, they did. When we come back, we're going to talk about the playoff, and the new playoff rankings are going to come out tonight. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They are committed, professional, and versatile, and they have been serving their community since 1971. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Okay, so this has kind of become a little bit of a staple of our Tuesday show. We will kind of give you what we think our bracket or what our bracket would look like based on what we think the College Football Playoff Selection Committee will do on Tuesday nights. The new bracket will come out tonight. And this is really intriguing because there was so much that happened over the weekend that affects the playoff, whether it be BYU losing, Colorado losing. Do you realize there's nine teams in the Big 12 that could still win the Big 12 this year?
The Big 12, I mean, we talked about the SEC and the tiebreakers and the ACC being a mess. The Big 12 is the biggest mess there is, I think.
I think I read there's something like 250 different combinations of a Big 12 championship game that there could still be.
It's insane.
Maybe I read that wrong. But anyway, I was reading something on CBS. It was like there's like 250 different scenarios that could still happen in the Big 12. Army loses, obviously. I don't know how much of a factor that has in here, but I do think
it wasn't competitive.
I do think it helps Notre Dame.
Yeah, if it had been more competitive, maybe it would have been different. But yeah, they just didn't.
You know, so they lose their first game. Indiana loses their first game of the year. And then you had everything that happened in the SEC with A&M and Alabama and Ole Miss all going down. So the new playoff rankings will come out tonight. We've got our brackets here. Blake will pull up mine first. And there it is. So, I mean, I'm playing it safe. I think that this is pretty much, you know, the top four is the same thing that I had last week, where you've got Oregon 1, Texas 2, Miami 3, and Boise State 4. And then and you've got the 5 through 12 over here on the left side. And, again, remember, we mention this all the time, that seedings are not rankings. But these are the seedings that I've got. I've got Ohio State number 5. I've got them playing Arizona State number 12. Arizona State beat BYU the other day. They're a two-loss team. Their coach is insane. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. Georgia, I got them at 8. Indiana falling to 9. So Indiana not completely. I think Indiana was one of the big winners on Saturday. The fact that they, you know, they didn't. Ohio State scored a late touchdown, I think probably to prove a little bit of a point to Kurt Cignetti, who made a little bit of a disparaging comment about Ohio State when he was hired. But then also, you know, I mean, they're trying to help their playoff chances too. Long story short, Indiana, I thought they held their own with Ohio State, you know, at least for a half in that game. And then all of the chaos that happens, you know, around them, they're still, I think, in a pretty good spot in the playoff. And then I've got them going to Georgia in the 8-9 game. In the 6-11 game, I've got Notre Dame hosting SMU. SMU, another big winner from the weekend. They're still undefeated in the ACC. And I think they're going to be in the ACC championship, right? Have I read that right? I think they've clinched their spot.
Yes, they have.
So all they've got to do is win that ACC championship game, and they're in the playoff with Rhett Lashley, the former Razorback, as their head coach. Also read that he got a new contract this week. And then I've gotten the 7-10 game, Penn State hosting Tennessee. Penn State, I've got them. Basically, I had Notre Dame jump Penn State this week. I think Notre Dame probably has a better a chance to be ranked higher than Penn State this week. So, again, I've got some SEC teams in there, but this doesn't look nearly as SEC and Big Ten heavy as it has in the past few weeks.
Yeah, I think we're pretty aligned here. But, yeah, I think you're right. The SEC, with all those three lost teams, it's going to be really, really tough for them to have the kind of playoff field that you would have expected them to before the season and that the SEC wants to going forward. It's just these three lost teams. You're going to see so much campaigning from these SEC programs in the next few weeks to try to get more in, and it's tough.
I just don't know how you put any other I don't know how you put any of these three lost SEC teams in. A&M's got a chance because A&M, if they beat Texas, they're going to go to the SEC championship game, and you've got the auto bid out of that game in Atlanta. But, you know, outside of them you can't put Alabama or Ole Miss or those. Ole Miss, no way they can go in. I mean, they were going to be, you know, they've got three losses now, and two of them are to teams. Yeah. You got a Kentucky team that's not any good, and you got a Florida team that's, you know, real middle of the pack.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about the weekend that was, is it's not like these SEC teams have all lost to each other and, you know, they're the top teams that are all kind of – they've all lost a stinker that they just should have won that looked bad.
Other than Georgia.
Yes, other than Georgia. And that's – Georgia's now in the SEC championship game. Yeah, so – and I think they could win it. So I think that's the thing about these three lost teams. It's not only is it three losses, it's three with a couple in there that just are inexplicable or that you just can't have them happen if you're going to make the playoff.
You know, like Alabama, they've lost to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Both of them are – I mean, they're okay teams this year, but they're not, you know, neither of them are these, you know, world beater teams. No. So I know there's a lot of talk about Alabama's trying to position itself to still have an argument with three losses. Yeah. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. Of course they're trying to position it. I don't think it's going to work.
I don't either. I think
it shouldn't work.
I think there's too many other, I think there's too many teams from other conferences that have, now, did they play Alabama's schedule? No, not that Alabama really played a tough non-conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wisconsin was their best non-conference team, and they haven't had a very good year at all.
Yeah.
I just think that there's a lot of teams from the ACC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 who are more deserving than these three-loss SEC teams.
Yeah. Hey, somebody on this fine audio program said Alabama was going to win the SEC and be a top four seed. I don't. Who could it be? I don't know. Who could that possibly have been? We'll have to review the tape and find out.
All right. So Christina's bracket is always a little bit different than mine, and by a little, I mean.
I
totally.
Feel like there's some similarities. So what I did is I did not do what I think.
Should we
the
tell
ranking...
people that you forgot a team?
Oh my God!
When you first,
here's the other thing that you didn't know. Last night, before I sent this to you, I forgot Oregon.
Oh,
I forgot
wow.
Oregon, and then when I got here this morning, we realized I had left Texas off. Which, okay, sure. So I fixed it all. This is a final answer. I think what I did was, this is not what I think it's going to look like based on tonight's ranking. This mm-hmm. is what I think it will look like based on what happens this week and in conference championship games. So this is like what I think the final bracket could be based on my predictions for those next couple of games. So I have Ohio State at number one, assuming they beat Oregon in the Big Ten championship. I have Georgia at number two because I assume that Texas is going to beat A&M and get to the championship. And I think Georgia can beat Texas. They've done it once this year, convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they can do it again. I also think if A&M beats Texas, I think Georgia beats them too. So I've got Georgia now as the SEC champion. We'll see if something weird happens with them and they are my new mistake in the SEC like Alabama was last week.
I think Georgia, as long as they don't trip up against Georgia Tech this week, and I think they're in the playoff regardless. And again, now you start maybe talking out of both sides of your mouth, but they're going to have three losses because they played an extra game.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than the Alabama Ole Miss discussion.
I'm not going to knock anybody for being a conference runner-up, really. So I have Miami at number three. That assumes they beat Syracuse this week, which is not as easy as it sounds. And then I have them beating SMU in the ACC championship. Miami, Clemson could get in there if Miami loses, but Miami has the advantage because they beat Louisville and Clemson did not.
Okay.
So it would be Miami and SMU in the championship. So then I have Boise State because I think they'll win the Mountain West, and I think they're the best G5. I think they'll be the highest ranked, and I don't think that the Big 12 champion is going to be strong enough to be higher ranked than them. So I have Boise State there, and then I have Oregon at five. That's assuming they're a Big 10 runner-up to Ohio State. I think Oregon still will deserve to be up high. I have Texas at six, assuming they're an SEC runner-up, having beaten Texas A&M. I feel solid about them. I think maybe that's a little high for compared to some people. I don't know. Where did you have Texas?
I had them at two.
But you had them at two. You have them winning. Yeah, you have.
That's also
yeah.
based on this week.
So now
they're going to be without Quinn Ewers potentially at A&M on Saturday.
Oh, that's a huge development. Yeah,
there.
I mean he's looked kind of unhealthy. He's been off and on.
There've been a lot of Florida State people chirping, you know, because they don't have anything else better to do with their time now. That's true. Because their football team can't beat anybody. I guess they did beat, like, Charleston Southern the other day. But long story short, you know, about, well, hey, you didn't let us go to the playoff because we didn't have our quarterback. It's a different story.
Yeah.
Number one, Florida State was down to their third-string quarterback mm-hmm. last year, and they were terrible. Mm-hmm. They were terrible offensively. Now, they had a great defense, and I think they got robbed last year. Yeah. I think you should have let them go to the playoff and just let's see what happens with that defense. But have you seen Arch Manning play?
I was going to say,
this is a little bit different than Florida State number three. I mean, this is a guy that probably should be starting at another SEC program right now, or at least he could be if he wanted to.
Right. They should be fine with their backup. So it is a different story. You're right. So I have them at six. I have Notre Dame at seven. The committee likes them a lot, obviously, with how they've been ranked. A win over Army is good. Army is a good team. They really handled them well. They have one really bad loss to Northern Illinois. I think that's really bad. I don't know how many teams have a loss worse than that, but at the same time, Notre Dame has pretty much handled most everybody else, especially
and Notre
lately.
Dame plays a unique schedule. I mean,
they do.
I feel like they're playing a better schedule than most teams are.
Mm-hmm. I have Penn State at eight and Indiana at nine. Those are two teams that their one losses are both to Ohio State. I think Penn State is better than Indiana. I think, you know, when you look at any kind of metric, Penn State gets the win there pretty much. I think Indiana, I was talking to my boyfriend about this last night. Indiana, the knock on Indiana has been their strength of schedule. And everybody says they have the 100th ranked strength of schedule. That was based on before they had played Ohio State. After they played Ohio State, it shot up to like 50. And it's better than several of these teams that we're talking about. So the argument that Indiana hasn't played anybody is not, the argument that they haven't played anybody based specifically on their strength of schedule ranking is not completely valid. So I still have Indiana up there. I'm not going to knock them for losing to Ohio State. You took the same approach there. I have Tennessee at 10. I think as far as SEC teams go, they're going to be up there. I have SMU at 11 as an ACC runner-up. I think that is dubious. I'm curious how the committee is going to rate the ACC as far as how they view them, or if they'll try to stick an SEC team in there.
Or could Clemson jump SMU?
Clemson could.
What if Clemson beats South Carolina this weekend?
Yeah, that's a big win. I mean, that's a bubble game. Those teams are both trying, you know, fighting to get in. They both have outside chances. Probably Clemson has a better chance than South Carolina, but still, I mean, that's a big game to watch this weekend. And it's funny, it's usually higher stakes for one side than the other, and that's a game that for both of them this week is really going to be interesting. And then I have Arizona State rounding out 12 as the Big 12 champion over Iowa State. Currently, as I understand it, Arizona State, Iowa State in the Big 12 championship is the most statistically likely outcome, but not a given at all. I mean, the Big 12 is such a mess.
Big 12 is crazy right now. I mean, like what Kansas has done, I read where they're the first team that's had a losing record and beaten three AP top 25 teams in consecutive weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, they've still got to win another game to get bowl eligible, though. Mm-hmm. And I think they got to play a pretty good team this week. Who are they playing?
I think they go to Waco.
So that's not a good team, but they do go to Waco. And
well, Baylor's better
than
you think. They've also kind of come on late. I feel like they were supposed to be pretty bad, and they've overperformed.
Like over half the conference thinks they could be in the Big 12 championship game going into the last weekend.
It's really crazy. So the Big 12. I mean, I've got Arizona State penciled in there. Nothing would surprise me with the Big 12 championship.
So your games. These are actually kind of some interesting games when you kind of sit back and think about it. You got Oregon, Arizona State. Which would be an old Pac-12 matchup, Indiana-Penn State, which is a Big Ten game now, SMU-Texas, old Southwest Conference rivalry, and Tennessee at Notre Dame. Those would be Christina's games. Again, this is all going to change before next week, and it's all going to be about who wins their conference championships. What's interesting to me is like how many different conferences don't know who are going to be in their conference championship games going into the last week. You got to have a pretty good idea, like you said, in some of them. Like Texas and Texas A&M, that's a play-in. Or I think if Ohio State beats Michigan, they're in the Big Ten championship to play Oregon. It's fun. I've said this a number of times this year. There are so many teams that still have a shot, and I think it's made this the most enjoyable college football season – that I can remember in a long time.
Yeah, I don't mind. I know everybody is now kind of clamoring for leagues to start going back to divisions so that this end of the year race is neater. But I don't, since it's not my job to figure it out, I don't mind the chaos.
So, like, think about the SEC. I'm glad they don't have divisions because we're going to get a first-time matchup in Atlanta this year. You're going to have either Texas or Texas A&M going there for the first time. You know, Georgia, they're back. But it beats, to me, watching Georgia play Alabama every year got really stale.
Yes.
You know, and that kind of, those kind of matchups, I couldn't tell you what happened in the Big Ten, but it felt like it was kind of the same deal every year. You know, the ACC, how many times did Clemson go in a row as the winner of, was it the Coastal and the Atlantic or divisions? Like, I can't, you know, so I like this. I like this a lot.
I do too. It's a lot more fun. There's a lot more to talk about. There's a lot more to watch. There's so much more reason to watch some of these games. We've talked about how so many times it's been foregone conclusions at this point in the year, and it's so fun. It's fun to not know. That's why you watch sports.
I haven't counted it up this week, but last week I counted that there were like 29 teams that still felt like they had a playoff chance.
Which is
like
crazy.
A legitimate playoff chance.
Yeah.
Now, a few of those have dropped out. Army's gone. Ole Miss is probably gone. You know, but I still would say there's probably – I mean, heck, there's 9 from the Big 12 alone.
Mm-hmm.
And the SEC, there's still, you know, 3 teams, and you know, I mean, really more than 3, but there's 3 teams that are live for the conference championship. I guess it's still more than 20 teams think they've got a chance to go to the playoff here, and we're what, maybe 11 days or so away from the selection.
Yeah, those first few out, just like it was in the 14 playoff. You know, who was 5 and 6 was always a big thing. Who's 13, 14 is going to be big for sure.
December 8th is when the college football playoff will be announced. Also, the bowl games will be announced that day. I mean, everybody, that's the thing about the expanded playoff is everybody's kind of in limbo. You know, we talked about this yesterday with Arkansas and their bowl chances. Where Arkansas goes is going to depend a lot on which SEC teams and how many SEC teams get into the playoff. And so there's a lot to sort out between now and December 8th. I'm glad that I'm not the one doing it. I just get to sit here and talk about it.
Exactly.
Hey, we appreciate you being with us. We will have one more podcast before Thanksgiving. Just a quick scheduling note, we're not going to do one on Thanksgiving. I don't think any of you would listen anyway on that day. You got plenty of other things to do. But we will have a podcast on Friday. We'll talk about the Illinois basketball game from the day before, and we'll do our normal predictions segment leading up to Arkansas and Missouri, which is on a Saturday this year. It's not a Black Friday game, so that's a little bit unique about this series as well. We got a lot to talk about tomorrow. We'll probably get into revenue share a little bit tomorrow, NIL. Sam Pittman had some comments about that this week. We've got some thoughts about that as well. But we appreciate you being with us. Hope we'll see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. Until tomorrow, have a great day, everyone.